Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because,
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
There's definitely a racial reckoning that needs to happen in the environmental space. I think tackling climate justice is tackling the very roots of this country, just like criminal justice is. When you're tackling climate justice, you're tackling colonization, white supremacy, you're tackling racism, and you're tackling patriarchy. Why am I 15 years old, 16 years old, spending 30, 40, 50 hours a week organizing events and campaigns and lawsuits just so people can have clean air and clean water? But at the end of the day, either I work with you or I work around you. And some of y'all are in our way. Y'all gonna have to get out.
This is The Secret Lives of Black Women. I'm Sharla.
And I'm Lauren.
And today we're talking about Black climate activism.
I am so jazzed about this conversation because I feel like so often in media portrayals of climate justice and climate change, Black and brown voices are left out when, let's keep it real, Black, Indigenous, brown people of color have been leaders of this movement since jump because we've had to for our survival.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Because our neighborhoods, our air, our water. Usually the target of corporate environmental attack.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I truly feel like climate change is just another one of many things that is just a function of white supremacy. And it's like with everything else, we've got to fight for ourselves. And we've been fighting for ourselves, you know. I feel like I'm just so sick of it always just being like a face that's not ours when it's like we've been doing the work.
Yeah, Lauren, you know? Looks so over it, you guys, if you could see her face right now. She's so over it.
I always get riled up when I just talk about
white supremacy really gets you. I don't know what it is about it, but you get real pissed.
Because it's just because it's the root of all evil. Legit.
I can't believe you answered that.
The root of all evil.
Why do you get mad at white supremacy? Because it's bad. No shit.
No shit.
Yeah.
But today I feel like I have a feeling in my bones that today's conversation is going to be really enlightening and inspiring.
Today we're talking to Elsa Mengistu. Elsa is an 18-year-old freshman at Howard University and a national climate justice organizer. As a student, she's been lobbying the administration to become more sustainable as part of the Howard University Sustainability Student Committee, pushing the school to reduce plastic waste and provide free public transportation to students.
Outside of school, she's worked with some of the biggest youth-led environmental advocacy organizations like This Is Zero Hour and consults other organizations on how to engage young people. She's currently planning a 4,000-person climate conference to train new climate activists in 2021.
And she wants to make more people aware of the disproportionate impact climate change will have on the Black community. I'm really excited to talk to Elsa, especially because environmental activism is always stereotypically associated with white people. It's given a white voice. It's talked about from the white perspective. And there's always this race-blind approach to the way that we talk about it and deal with it. And I cannot wait to talk to her and get into the nitty-gritty.
You know, and the children shall lead.
Indeed.
Let's get to it. Let's talk to Elsa. What called you to do this specific work around climate justice and climate change?
It was an accident, actually. I've never labeled myself an environmentalist. It was just common sense. I didn't have to go out of my way to really believe in it. But one day I was scrolling on Facebook and I came across a bunch of climate justice information. And I've never seen a group of youth or a group of people or adults talk about climate change through the lens of day-to-day people and what that means for people that look like me and communities that are not included in conversations regarding issues of this scale. And so I was just kind of like drawn in by the fact that there are a group of kids showing the humanity behind the climate crisis. And so I joined just because, honestly, I related to it. And it was the first time that I saw stories instead of data or stories instead of like fear mongering or something. Mm-hmm. That's how I got drawn into it. But I actually had to take a major step back from my climate work this year, transitioning into school and not realizing how much that I invested into climate work and how much of a toll that took on my relationship with work and how I view others and just like just myself in general. And so I think it's weird for me right now just because I'm trying to like find a balance where mm-hmm. I don't want climate work to take over my life, but also climate injustice is going to take my life.
Whoa.
So that was kind of a weird balance I'm trying to figure out right now, but it feels more empowering than feeling weird, if that makes sense.
Yeah. You said that climate work has kind of like, it's kind of affected your relationship with people and with school. Like, can you talk more about that? What has it kind of taken from you? What have you had to kind of sacrifice in order to do this work?
Yeah. So I started hardcore organizing climate justice towards the end of junior year of high school and all of senior year of high school. And at the time, I was operations director and partnerships director for Zero Hour, which is a youth-led organization with 100 chapters globally focusing on climate justice and making sure that frontline and marginalized voices are the ones at the center of these discussions. And at the time, we were putting on a 400-person conference in a state, in a city that where we've had no previous space. And that would mean I could put easily 40 to 80 hours a week into planning stuff like this on top of other campaigns that we had and any other projects and groups that I was working with, on top of being in school, on top of doing all of that for free. And being so young, 18, 16, 15, and working with a bunch of kids who have never before running an organization, that shit is hard.
Right.
Everyone is just like, oh, I'm so proud of you. I'm so inspired by you guys. But learning to handle yourselves professionally and learning to handle yourself with people that are like double and triple your age that don't know how to handle themselves, and just being 17 and drafting a 9-page contract and putting a venue space in my name was kind of like, oh shit, this is actually real. And then it just kind of changes the way you look at things, because it was, oh, yeah, I'm not, like, I skip my own prom to go to a conference and do some, like, hardcore networking for the conference that I was planning. And so, like, it's just always a balance of figuring it out. I had an essay due last semester for one of my English classes, and I turned it in, like a month and a half late, but just because my professor was, I guess, understanding of my schedule. Mm-hmm. But I was, like, 30,000 feet in the air crying because I have to type this paper, but I just missed a week and a half of school, and then I'm coming back, and then in less than 24 hours, I'm leaving again for 2 days, coming back, and then in 3 days, I have finals.
Was this a defining moment for you in recognizing that this is work that's going to save us all and super big, but that your own life also has precedence too, that you needed to have balance?
Definitely. I think investing so much of my time and so much of myself in high school into this work, it kind of let me forget to invest in myself. And the most radical act is self-care. And if we are not self-sustaining ourselves, then we can't sustain movements. And so it really forced me to take a step back and think about who am I and what am I doing and what impact am I making, but also what am I doing for myself? Because I can't do both if I'm not, like, I have to do both if I'm going to do one, if, yeah.
Is there a sense of resentment against, I mean, amongst people your age who are doing this work that you're being, like, robbed of your adolescence?
Like, you didn't create these problems, you've inherited
like,
them.
I can hear it in your voice that you're, like, being, this is, like, stuff you have to do and it's taking away so much from your life.
I mean, It is a blessing. I get opportunities that I would have never imagined, and I have a platform to talk to people about issues that maybe they don't listen to on the daily. And so I think it's a blessing, but also, why am I 15 years old, 16 years old, spending 30, 40, 50 hours a week organizing events and campaigns and lawsuits just so people can have clean air and clean water? Like,
yeah,
that's ridiculous. It's so frustrating. I don't know why I'm doing it. I mean, I know why I'm doing it, but why?
In your work, do you think that you face, like, because I remember being 18 and just feeling like adults just didn't understand or they've forgotten what being youthful was like just the challenges that you go through as an 18-year-old. And I think, to me, it's really interesting that young people are playing a large part in leading this movement of climate change, because it is like adults and corporations and capitalism have forgotten that they're playing a huge part in these issues, and some people don't believe it. So how do you combat that when you're faced with powers bigger than you that are like, this is not, like, people who are like, climate change isn't even real?
Oh, that's not my concern.
Yeah.
People like that, they're not on my radar. For the most part, whenever, at least in, like, the work sphere, whenever I work on climate justice or most people I know, the adults, they're not obstacles. They are obstacles. But they're not obstacles in the sense of, oh, climate change isn't real. Obstacles in the sense of, hey, we need funding to put this event together. No, you're kids. You don't know how to handle your money. We'll send you 4,000 chocolate bars instead. Or adults that will give you a pat on the back and say, thank you so much for what you're doing for your generation and my generation. I've completely given up. That's so backwards. And so it's kind of defeating when adults kind of, like, talk to us with rhetoric like that. But at the end of the day, either I work with you or I work around you. And that's what we've been doing. And so I just kind of ignore it.
So you're a freshman at Howard.
Yes, I am.
And you've already lobbied the administration for more sustainability.
I've just been helping with the proposals behind the scenes and try and give support, just because I haven't been able to organize as much as I wish. But yeah, there have been really large efforts to push our school to be more sustainable, or at least stay on track for its target goals that they have set for themselves.
Were these efforts going on before you got there, or when you got there, you started seeking out and pushing these efforts?
There have been pushes before through others, like student bodies. And on campus, there has always been like a lively sustainability crowd, like a green crowd. All of campus has just been kind of separated. So maybe we'll have like 15 clubs doing different things, but none of those clubs were united in getting the administration to do one thing, or were united in collectively putting their bases and their messaging together. And I think that just recently started when I got here as a freshman, and I connected with some student leaders that were really interested in this. And it came out of the strike. We were hosting a climate strike here to pressure the university to like do what it's supposed to do. And then through negotiations with the university, it looked promising. And so I think the strike Yeah, the strike happened, but it didn't happen to the scale like a protest as we initially planned. But it just kind of came out of the planning for the strike. So I'm not sure as to like what extent work has been done on this, but there has been a scene here for a while working on issues like this.
What has it been like to do the work at Howard? Because I imagine a lot of the spaces in the climate movement, I wonder, are they very intersectional? So what has it been like to be on campus at Howard and do this work with other Black youth for Black people?
And how receptive has the administration been?
Those are two separate questions. Yeah. So working with, I haven't been able to invest as much time as I've wanted this semester just because everything just went out the window and got chaotic. But the first public meeting I went to, it was just a room of all Black people that care about the earth. And in environmental scenes, spaces, it's the like complete opposite. Complete opposite. You might see like maybe one or two Black people here and there, unless you're in the youth climate space or the EJS, environmental justice space, intentionally seeking out people that look like you or a diverse group of people working on issues. I've just never been so like affirmed in my identity and the work that I'm doing until I was in a room full of 150 Black people that were that cared about what's going on campus and what is our university doing to make sure that they are doing what they need to be doing. And so that itself was affirming. The university, on the other hand, is interesting. I don't know much about the school. I've been here for a semester now. But they seemed really receptive when we had the proposals listed and when we proposed when the people that were proposing the idea proposed that we have a student committee that is responsible for this, that works with the departments within the school to make sure that we're actually recycling and making sure that our dorms are being sustainable and making sure that we're keeping up with what we need to be keeping up with. In those terms, they have been receptive, but only have they been receptive after they have been called out and after a fear of backlash during the climate strikes. And so up until that point, I haven't really been seeing much, but hopefully we are heading in a new direction. But that's really only going to happen if we continue to keep pressure on the institution, because no institution is going to do anything that matters unless you force it from them.
Right.
I am wondering, you just said that you've been in college for a semester, and that's such an exciting time in your life and you're searching for balance. I wonder, what do you do for fun? Like, how do you unwind and take care of yourself to find this balance?
I go to Howard, so they turn up. I'm with my friends all the time. I'm always with my friends. Either I'm with my friends or I'm by myself and I just decompress. I love listening to music. I just love doing like random things for no reason. Mm-hmm. It's like 3 a.m. I'm gonna go to the monuments.
What music are you listening
with
to?
Me. Hot music. I've been trying to expand. My music taste has been like so limited. But right now I'm trying to get into more R&B and more hip hop because that's something that I didn't really go much into other than like surface level. But my favorite artist, I will say, is Jhené Aiko.
Oh.
She just soothes me. My soul is just like paused.
Her Trigger Protection Mantra song has just been like a meditation anthem for me.
All the time. Everywhere.
When I'm like, let's get still, let's pause.
All the time, yes. Yes, that song. But yeah, I just chill.
Nice. Okay, we're going to take a really quick break. And when we get back, I just have so many questions about, you know, the broader climate change movement and attaching it to like racial activism and what can we as individuals do to create some change. So we're going to take a break and come right back.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
For over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night, no matter how chaotic your day is. Conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute. And craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
And we're back. I have a question, which is, how do you think being a Black woman has impacted your perspective on this work and the spaces that you occupy in doing it?
I think it means that when I do this work, I have to unpack my identity. I mean, as a Black woman, I have to acknowledge the privilege that I have, which is why I'm able to do this work in the first place, organizing for free most of the time. I have that privilege that I can do that, but also unpacking the rest of my identities. I'm an immigrant from Ethiopia. I moved here when I was 2.5 with my family. I'm first generation. Ethiopia and Eritrea they deal with worse droughts because of climate change. And so I can see my family struggle here. But then in the United States, I have some kind of privilege because of, like, my economic status and how my family has been able to raise me. Just even, like, just in those two identities themselves, I just have to unpack them. And whenever I do work in the climate space, is recognizing that there's only in the climate space, I might see, like, maybe 10 other faces that look like me. And so me being there, I'm automatically representing communities that look like me, even though I can't speak for everybody. It just means that this is more personal for me and that I'm not doing this to be cute. My communities are on the line. And so it's just more personal.
One of our first episodes is being like the only Black face in a white space and the way that you have to navigate that, just even in like a basic work setting. And I think for something so big, how are you navigating that? And are there Black elders in the community that you can like look up to that give you advice on how to like deal with the bullshit of the bureaucracy of like all worlds, including activism?
Yes. So when I first started this activism and I would just hear tea about these different organizations, I'm like, oh, wow, anti-Black. OK, cool. Not working over there, not working with them. And I would just hear stuff. And I'm like, oh, wow. Like the environmental space is just anti-Black. OK, cute. But the entire time for me, I didn't work. I worked with Zero Hour and we are. At the time, all of our directors were women of color. And so in every space that I was in with the youth that I was working with, I was always validated. I was never second-guessed because of, like, the complexion of my skin. Instead, like, my experiences and my identities were validated and uplifted. And that gave credibility to what I was doing and what I was saying, which is complete opposite of, I'd say, the adult space. I'd say it's the complete opposite for this space as a whole. I know lots of mentors that would just tell me, like, off it, like, terrible stories about the spaces that they worked in and that they organized in and how anti-Black they were and just the things that they had to deal with as they were growing up in this movement that I haven't had to deal with, simply just because we were able to create a space where youth like me and people like me were able to thrive comfortably. But there's definitely a racial reckoning that needs to happen in the environmental space and how that's leading to so many talented Black and brown youth and women from not joining this movement and joining this space, which is ultimately hurting us.
Elsa, have you ever experienced a racist moment while you've been doing this work?
Personally, me, I have not. Actually, never mind. You always think you do. I can't say any names, but me and two other girls were giving a speech at a climate concert 2 years ago, the start of my junior year of high school, so the first time that I had ever really done public speaking for climate justice or anything of that sort. And our speech was talking about climate justice, indigenous rights, Black Lives Matter, and just things of that nature, and just connecting systems of oppression and intersectionality into our work. And one of the people in the audience, a grown man, was just talking so much shit about us. And he was just talking, it was just like, things a grown man wouldn't be saying about kids, but basically just saying we're like skinhead lesbians that had no idea what we're talking about, and that we shouldn't focus too much on race because it was divisive and just things of that nature. And this is a person of big profile, a person of big connections, a person who is well respected in their spaces. They're verified. They have a check mark on Twitter, Instagram. They work for really reputable organizations and institutions, and they're just saying this about us as youth and saying that to other adults in this space. And so while people don't approach me with stuff like that, they definitely do say it and you hear about it.
How did you guys respond to that?
I'm not going to trip over a 45-year-old man that's saying something about me, but it was just very eye-opening as to, I think tackling climate justice is tackling the very roots of this country, just like criminal justice is.
Yeah.
You're tackling climate justice, you're tackling colonization, white supremacy, you're tackling racism, and you're tackling patriarchy. And it just opened my eyes as to, damn, like, this shit is real. There's so much more that we have to do. And it's just not ending climate change. It's abolishing systems of oppression. And some of y'all are in our way. Y'all gonna have to get out.
You better tell them, Elsa.
Tell
them. Oh my God. I got chills. You're like, I seriously want to like go out and fight right now and fight somebody.
Period.
Seriously.
You should.
Do you feel like the youth-led organizations that are coming up are as anti-Black or as like segregated, I guess, as these older ones? Do you think like there's the racial reckoning that you're talking about, is that happening in the youth?
Yeah, actually. Even Zero Hour, Women of Color Board of Directors, like 80-75% POC membership, like
yes.
Team membership.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have to recognize how we internalize white supremacy and how that shows up in our works, in our workspaces. And so I think we've had two trainings where we had to dissect how white supremacy pops up and how we communicate with each other, how we view work, the relationship we have between like work and productivity and management and stuff like that. Oh. And so
Lauren and I are looking at each other like mind blown. We're like, I can't believe the level of how sophisticated you guys are in
now,
talking about this.
In our 30s, am I thinking about the decolonization of my own mind
my
workspace.
Absolutely.
So it's really inspiring to listen
to hear you
say that you're doing all these things so that the youth are doing all these things, you know?
Especially the way that you guys are centering it to the work and making it important, because it's crucial to the work.
It is. And people don't recognize that. Like, at the end of the day, white supremacy is going to show up in every single space.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. Why? We live in a world that is shaped by white supremacy.
Absolutely.
There's not a damn thing in this world that you can't touch that is not touched by white supremacy.
Ain't a damn thing. When you guys talk to media, do you guys talk in your training when you're trying to, you know, decolonize basically in your own minds? Like, do you talk about how to talk to the media in a way that gets them to I guess, portray these stories? Because even the media talks about environmental issues and environmentalists of color from a lens of white supremacy.
A lens of white supremacy, and I will say, like, magical unicorn of, like, they don't exist. It's always, like, how can we put a white face
absolutely
on this?
Yeah. I'm just like, who's reining them in the way that they talk about this?
So I don't know what they've been doing recently, but I know that we have a Medium page, because whenever we would pitch stories about climate injustice and talking about like how that relates to race or gender or economic class or something like that, it would be denied by like a major publication. But if we pitch something that was something very basic and just surface level, just talking about climate crisis and being a kid, stuff like that always gets published. And so I always see kids like having to self-publish their own things or having their own Medium pages and posting their own articles and stuff like that. And so we kind of go around the media. A lot of our work is on social media as well. Just because media kind of just doesn't get it. They want to paint the face of this movement of two people that popped up like 3 years ago.
Who are not acknowledging the that white supremacy plays the biggest function of creating these issues. You know, it's really interesting. I was like having this conversation with the friend who's East Asian. She's like, a lot of these countries are labeled as like the world's biggest polluters, but there's no way that the size of people in those countries can create that pollution. But when you look at the companies that are there, that are garment factories, that are owned by European industrial brands, that creates the pollution in these smaller countries that then get to take the blame, and they're usually brown countries.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Or when we ship our trash across the world for no reason. It's a bunch of bullshit.
There seems to be a lack, I think especially with climate change, there's a lack of accountability. And I'm interested to get your opinion on this interesting shift that's happening that's like a focus, which I think also is a system of white supremacy, a focus of like, well, just go vegan or just go like, don't use straws, but not looking at the corporate impact of like, why are we not talking about like industrial farming? You know, why is the onus always placed on an individual? And I feel like and negatively placed on like Black individuals and people of color as like, well, you eat too much meat, you do this. And it's like, that's going to have an impact, but the bigger impact is going to be breaking down capitalism.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I was on a panel a few weeks ago, and it was the first time that a lot of people in the audience heard the message that they were not responsible for the climate crisis, that their individual actions cannot ever add up to the actions of one corporation that is responsible for the pollution that they create. And there's just a complete self of actual accountability when it comes to talking about how did we get in this mess? You don't get into this mess by not recycling your trash can. We get into this mess by having the top 100 companies being responsible for 43% of emissions or something like that. We get into this mess by letting mega corporations go to other countries, extract their resources, and then take their trash and put them back in those countries. We get into this issue by having an economic system that pretends that our earth has an infinite amount of resources and that we can just take, and then commodify land, water, and air. That's how we got into the solution, but we want to place blame on individual people so we don't actually have to correct the systems and and revolutionize the way that we live and solve this issue accurately and how we need to be doing. And so they're just not the same thing, like not using a straw and having a company that has like 50 airplanes fly out in one day. It's just not the same thing. It's just not the same level of damage.
Yeah, that's a word.
So then, I mean, what do we do then? Like, how do we call these corporations out? Like, since it isn't our individual actions, like, what can we do as individuals to hold them accountable?
I mean, at the end of the day, our individual actions do add up. So, yeah, we should keep track on that. But it's just gonna take us being on the government's ass, literally. Because at the end of the day, what am I gonna do? What am I gonna tell Walmart? Can you stop using plastic? Walmart is not gonna listen to me ever. But the theory of change that we've been working on, like just a few youth activists that I know, is that you only need I think it's 3.5% of the population to be part of a movement for it to be successful. And so in the United States, we only need 30 million people that are actively on the government's ass, actively on everybody's ass, advocating for a Green New Deal, advocating for a complete transition to green new energy, advocating for completely redoing these systems that we live in. We only need 3.5% of the population to do anything that we need to do. And it's just constantly being on our government's asses. And with school striking, I think that's really awesome because it forces you to look at, y'all skipping school to go strike?
Yeah.
Y'all not
yeah.
skipping school to go do this, yeah. go do that. You're skipping school to go protest. Are you serious?
One of the things that I'm really, one of my goals for this year is to like really start to lobby or to bug the local government that, you know, like in my zip code. Like, because I always feel like as a country, we talk about the presidential election as if it is the most important election, when really these smaller elections, these school board elections, your city council, like these are like the people who make the local decisions that I feel like will reverberate to more on a more national level.
There's so much we can do on a local level. Just having your schools, Schools for Climate Action in California, one of my friends is the executive director of that, and their whole focus is to have school councils acknowledge that the climate crisis is real and that it's an emergency, and implementing that in their actual education. And just having that as part of the curriculum and having the entire school system focus on being more sustainable and being eco-friendly. And that's just one avenue of change that we can all take, like students can take in getting their own school systems to act. Majority of our change is going to come from our local communities. If we want green democracy and we want to be responsible for the energy that we consume in our own communities and not have mega corporations tell us what we're going to use and when we're going to use it, then we need to be working with city council to invest in energy democracy and investing in renewable energy that communities can take care of and be responsible for on their own if we don't want to rely on faceless corporations that are already damaging the earth. And so at the end of the day, all of this comes down to local action and passing many Green New Deals everywhere.
What right now, because I know a lot of times when we read about climate change in the paper, it's like doomsday scenarios. Like, we've only got 10 years.
Yeah.
Make the most of it. Shoot your shot. We're all going to die. What is giving you hope? Like, when you hear that, if people just of the defeatist attitude, what gives you hope that life is possible after this doomsday scenario 10-year?
Because I can't not have it. I know too many incredible, inspiring people who put all their time, their energy, their focus into building a movement that reflects the people and the needs of the people that are in that movement. I know so many youth that are giving up their childhood to put a stop to this issue. I know so many people, I just know I've seen too much greatness in the spaces that I've been in for me to not have hope that our future, that we're not going to have a future or something. There's just too many people investing in a better tomorrow for me to believe that we're not going to have one.
That was beautiful.
So wise.
You're so inspiring. I'm so obsessed, Elsa. I'm really grateful for the work that you're doing. I feel like we owe you a lot as a person who should be enjoying their youth, who's literally, quite literally sacrificing their adolescence in this time in your life to do this super important work. But I mean, I guess kudos. I don't know.
Kudos,
what,
yeah.
What would I say?
How would you... What advice would you give to someone who is listening, who's young or older, who wants to get involved, who's like listening and is feeling very inspired to get a call to action?
I have two pieces of advice, one for older people. If you're an adult and you want to be engaged in these issues, the compliments and the pats on the backs and the congratulations, those are cute, but those are done. What we need are accomplices and allies.
You gotta tell them, Elsa.
For us to do the work that we are doing, we need adults to put their reputations, to put their connections, to put their money, to put their time and invest it into us, into our movement, so that we can do something. We're 15, 16, 17. We can't sign contracts. We can't hold a rally unless we have someone that's over 18 helping us do this stuff. We can't get into meetings unless we have adults vouch for our credibility. We can't do the shit that we need to be doing unless we have people actively advocating for and with us. And so simply just supporting the movement is cool, but if you really want to have impact, be an accomplice. Put your money and resources and your time and your connections and invest them into us so we can actually do something instead of spending a year and a half building up ground resources just so we can plan what we're going to do next year. If you want youth activists to do work for you, please pay them.
Right.
If you want us to create content or curriculums or presentations for you, pay us for our information, pay us for our time. I can organize all day and I will do it and I won't charge a cent for it. But there is a mass privilege in me being able to do that the entire span of my high school career because my parents were able to provide for me that I didn't have to have a job so I can focus on this. A lot of youth don't have that privilege. Pay them for their time so they can contribute to this movement while they're taking care of what needs to be taken care of. And for youth, just find your local group and get involved. That's it. I was just scrolling on Facebook and I bugged the fuck out of this group to join and they let me join. My life has been changed forever because of it. And I've learned so much. You don't have to have so much knowledge to jump in. You don't have to know everything to work on climate change or climate justice. You don't have to know anything. You just have to be willing to learn. I didn't jump into this knowing anything about anything. And I have been able to contribute to this space like anybody else has.
Totally hear you. Absolutely.
Amazing.
Thank you so much. We like to end every episode by asking our guests, what is your secret? To life, to thriving, to living.
Joy.
I'm still figuring that out. I'd say my secret right now is just to know that life is so seasonal. Everything changes. Nothing ever stays the same. Just get used to it. And if you got you, you got you. That's all you need.
I'm so excited to see all of the things that you're doing but are going to continue to do in the world. Like, I feel like we've all got to get involved and get active and get out of this doomsday prep.
Yes.
If only so you can be our leader.
Right.
You know, like, I just feel like you're so wise and I feel so energized by this. And I want you to keep doing the work that you're doing but to also have a lot of fun and enjoy.
Absolutely. I've learned so much from you, Elsa, on this talk. Thank you so much for talking to us.
No, thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
And is there anything that you want to like plug?
Yes.
Is there like a Twitter or a website that you have for people to get more information about you and the work that you're doing?
Yeah. So all of my social media is Elsa Mengistu, ElsaMengistu. And that's where people can reach me. And that's where I post a lot of campaigns that I'm working on, mainly on my Instagram stories. I don't post, but that's where a lot of my work is posted.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We appreciate all the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Bye, Elsa.
Bye. Bye.
I have like really mixed, complicated feelings right now because I feel like I'm so inspired by her, but I'm also mad that this is the reality of the world and our lives. I'm pissed.
And it's, I mean, she made so many good points, but it's just like the sacrifices that young people are making just to ensure their lives.
Yeah.
And it's just like we all should be stepping up to the plate. So it makes me feel like I've personally got a lot of work.
I've personally got a lot of work.
And like to get involved, you know?
I'm pissed about so many things. I'm pissed about the fact that, you know, we still have to protect these people, like the person whose name she couldn't mention because, you know, you don't ever want to, for some reason, disparage people, even though there are shitty people and they should be disparaged. I'm pissed about the fact that when she said 3.5%, you know, it sounds so small.
It is.
Like 30 million people out of 300 million or something like that. And it's like, oof. And also, I feel like there's just this apathy to like really take down these corporations that are causing so much of these issues.
Because it's really like, I mean, when she mentions like, I'm one person, I can't take down Walmart. I was like, but man, when you think about it, I feel like there's such this onus of like, bring your own plastic, bring your own bags.
Yeah.
Right? But like, what if Walmart just stopped using plastic bags?
What if we just stopped making plastic bags?
Exactly.
Just ban plastic bags. Who is benefiting from plastic bags?
Well, corporations, it's cheap to do it. I mean, I'm just feeling there's so much more to do, feeling very thankful, very, very inspired by like the work that like young people are doing. Also thinking back to me being 18 and a college student and literally just being blackout drunk every weekend and not even be able to coherently put together a sentence and being this wise.
I could not have like drafting contracts to like to have venue. Like I could not have done the kinds of things that she was doing at that age.
I don't think I had a passion for anything or real scope of like the world and my actions and the ability to change
things.
Like,
yeah.
So just the fact that I look at like an 18-year-old black woman who's like, I'm changing things.
Yeah.
It's not that I have the ability to do it, I'm doing it. It's just crazy inspiring.
It's also just like I think I've always thought of myself like, oh, you know, those people are activists. And like those people have, I don't know what it is that they have that I don't have, but now I'm just like, she's just a kid who just felt some type of way, and she's quite literally putting her life on hold. She's as ambitious as I was. She's as determined as I was to make something of herself, and she's quite literally putting her life on hold to do the work. So I'm just like, man, what am I going to do this year?
One of the things she says, which is actually my word of the week and sort of a push for me to get involved, is she said, you don't have to know everything. You don't have to know anything. You just need to be willing to learn.
Yeah.
And I was like, putting it on my fridge. Yes. It's a willingness to learn and to also know that things can change.
She also said life is seasonal and everything changes, which is incredible wisdom for 18 years old to know that things will change and things can change. I think my word of the week for this week is because I've been so pessimistic about the world lately, which, you know, I think I have full reason to be.
Absolutely.
Is optimism. She gave me a little bit of hope. She gave me some hope just talking to her and being inspired by her work and feeling like I can do some work, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that everyone who's just listening, that it's also given you a little bit of hope. Like, what is the number? 3.5%.
Right.
Like, let's all be a part of that.
Let's be a part of
number and really fuck shit up, because it's like, you know, black women, again, we'll save the world. We're doing it right now. Thank you, Elsa. Let's all join this fight.
Tear down white supremacy, because, again, it is at the root of so many problems.
All of them.
It is the world's evil. Let's kill that shit.
Let's kill that shit. We hope that you go out, you fight the fight, you get inspired, you look up Elsa, you support youth activists.
Support Zero Hour.
Support Zero Hour. Just get to it and, you know, also find some joy and balance in your day, too, yeah. while you're doing
that. What did
that.
She say that, like, self-care is revolution? Or, like, she said
it's
it was,
a radical
It's a radical act.
Act. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So get to it, and we will chat with you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
The Secret Lives of Black Women is a production of Stitcher. We are your hosts, Charlotte Lauriston and Lauren Domino. Our producer is Taylor Hosking. Our senior producer is Stephanie Karaoke. Our editor is Gianna Palmer. Special thanks to our chief content officer, Chris Bannon, and our recording and mixing engineer, Andy Christens. Make sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at the SLBW. See you later.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.